your smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solitaire. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Gil T. Wilson.
Nerd Up! And welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson, along with...
Eric Billingsley.
Tim Coker.
I don't know if I can follow that up. Tim Matson.
And Isaac Wilson.
Okay, so we're going to talk about some nerdy things. First of all, let's jump on the bandwagon of television, since it's almost time for the new season of television. You guys are all anxious for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You guys ready for that to come back?
Nah. Please. God, yes.
It's been a long summer. Actually, see, I played it right. I had all my stuff DVR'd, and all summer long, I watched all the cool stuff while you guys were watching reruns. They were new to me. Well, I can't wait, because I just want to see how it's going to go with the next movie cycle, and you know they're going to do that. Plus, in fact, let's talk about one of the things that's going to happen is they're going to do a spinoff from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. called Marvel's Most Wanted. At first, they almost weren't going to do this, and then they decided, oh, let's go ahead and do it. And it's going to be based on Bobby, or Mockingbird, and what's his name, Lance Hunter?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's one of those.
Well, it's Hunter, right now.
Yeah, it's Hunter.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, they're going to be doing that spinoff following her. I don't know where they're going to go. I haven't looked too much into it because I kind of want to be surprised by it. Have you guys heard very much about this spinoff?
Not since I heard it was on again. That's all I heard.
I don't know that I'm that into it, honestly. I mean, I'll check it out, but I like her character a lot as a character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. already functions at enough of a remove from the actual Marvel universe, you know, just because they can't really use any of the characters that might be in a movie or whatever, you know?
Right.
Like, that's already at enough of a remove from actual Marvel. And then creating another show that's at another step of remove from that, I don't know if the Marvel content's going to be enough to bring me.
I'm wondering, I think I'm almost with you on this, except for just the fact that it's a comic book-based series on TV, about the only thing that really has me going. Is it going to be like another party going to be rounding up Inhumans? I'm not sure where they're going to go, but
yeah,
I mean, it's one of those, like, I'll watch it, I don't know if I'm going to like it.
I don't know, I feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. is already fairly weak as it is, and I think if you take two of the more genuinely fun characters out of it,
yeah,
it's going to be pretty boring. I don't know. S.H.I.E.L.D. has jumped the shark for me. I'm not really that excited about it coming back. And the fact that they're taking two characters that I enjoyed off that show and saying, okay, if you want to follow their adventures, you have to watch another show on top of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying no thank you.
Kind of like how I am. I mean, I'm still going to watch S.H.I.E.L.D. because I love the way they tie it in with the Marvel Universe. But with this thing, it's like, you know, I liked them on S.H.I.E.L.D. Like you said, I liked them on S.H.I.E.L.D. Leave them there.
I'm still going to follow it, and I'm still into it. I was a little disappointed with how the last season ended, but I'm still sticking with it. But it's just kind of funny, though, that Daredevil has kind of changed everything.
Enormously.
Enormously.
I mean, up until we saw Daredevil on Netflix, I mean, this was the only television incarnation of the new Marvel Cinematic Universe that we had. And I enjoyed it, and I still am enjoying it. But Daredevil took it such another level. And you're like, yes, and everything should be like this. Everything should be this, have this kind of a production values and acting, and I mean, there's just no reason why network couldn't do it.
It feels like it counts.
Yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does not feel like it counts. I have to differ with you, Gil, on this. I don't think it ties into the movies at all, only very tangentially. Whereas I feel like Daredevil, even though it doesn't directly tie to the movies, it feels like it belongs with that group.
Well, see, I'm looking at the future of the Marvel movies, mainly on my aspect, because they're leading up to an Inhumans movie. And that's the way I see it, the building up on that aspect. I mean, and plus with the tie-in that they had with Captain America Winter Soldier, is like a boom there. And so every once in a while, they surprise us with that. And so, again, next year's launch of a bunch of movies, we'll have to see what happens. So Marvel has Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as their TV tie-in, if you will. DC, we all know that none of their TV properties are going to have anything to do with the movies. However, that's another one that I wanted to kind of bring up on the TV world. They're trying, they got the pilot okayed, to do a series called Powerless. And it's based on an insurance agency that takes care of claims of things that are destroyed by all these superheroes. And they say that in the series that superheroes will be making an appearance. Now, whether it's going to be the TV version of Flash or the movie version of Flash or the movie version of Superman or what, they're not releasing any information on that aspect. But they're saying it's The Office in the DC Comics universe. What do you guys think of that?
Maybe this is just me bringing my Marvel baggage, but somebody better be sending Dwayne McDuffie's widow a big check, because this sounds exactly like Damage Control.
I was thinking.
I'm not hostile to them doing it, and I think it could be a really fun show if they actually can somehow catch lightning in a bottle and make a great, you know, Office sitcom set in the superhero universe. Like, I'd be all over that. But I've got to say, yeah, it's weird that DC basically took Marvel's idea and did it instead of Marvel coming up with that.
Yeah. That was actually a pretty cool run, that Damage Control. There were some really interesting characters. I think Deathlok even made an appearance in Damage Control. I'm trying to think. Several of the heroes did. But yeah, I forgot all about that.
I think your hopes and dreams for an actual superhero showing up on this show would be pretty slim, considering I'm looking at the IMDb cast list. They have a listing for Captain Power and The Hood, who cares, whatever those are. I mean, can you think of a more generic name than Captain Power, really?
It actually sounds like a joke.
What was that, Captain Amazing? What was that movie that had Captain Amazing and...
Hero at Large?
I think that was... Anyway, so yeah, just about as generic as that. So, wow. So yeah, you know, maybe they're just trying, I don't know. Again, if it does make it to the TV airwaves, I will watch it. I will give it a try.
I like the premise. I think the premise has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And even if they do have joke characters like Captain Power, I'm okay with that, as long as they're telling a good story and have good cast members to really carry the weight of it.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. Is this actually going to be good, or is it just another kind of corporate synergy thing?
Well, was it one of you guys that I was talking to that said it sounded like Big Bang Theory meets The Office or something like that? When I read the premise, that's kind of like what it sounds like. A lot of hidden jokes. All right, well, let's move on to a couple of other things. Let's go to another DC property, The Flash. This new season of The Flash, they just keep overloading it, and well, not in a bad way to me, with all these deep cut villains and other heroes. Like, they're coming back with Jay Garrick the Flash. That's the guy that wore the Mercury helmet, you know? And that's gonna be weird. I mean, the promotional poster they had, it was that iconic comic book cover where the Flash and Jay Garrick Flash were running different sides of a brick wall. And it's like, wow, that's a really interesting view. It's how are they going to bring him into this Flash universe? Once someone said, it looks like they're trying to steal all the Flash characters before they can make the movie.
I give it a huge thumbs up, man. The one thing I'll say about The Flash, and, you know, it's a mixed bag, right? Tim, you tried to watch it, right?
I really tried, guys.
Yeah.
I really, really tried. But I swear to God, if they don't 86 Iris Allen soon, that is the worst. Oh my God. She's literally the only thing keeping me from watching that show. I cannot do it.
I want to make a t-shirt for the next convention that is just her face, and it just says the worst. Because everybody I talk to about the show feels that way about Iris. She's a disaster. There's but okay, not to get derailed here, because, you know, we do have something to talk about, which is, you know, Jay Garrick. To me, the thing that won me over about The Flash by the end of the season, and it's hard going to get to the end of the season, but it is comic book as hell. Like, they really are embracing it. And
yeah,
like, that's what I mean. Like, don't namby-pamby around with stupid, made up, crap that doesn't mean anything, you know, or not doesn't mean anything, but doesn't resonate, use the comics as your source material. And the Flash show is absolutely doing that. You know, the results are mixed, but I give him full credit for actually bothering to delve into the characters from the comics and do it up.
Yeah, and they even influenced the Arrow to start doing that, to go away from that dark, broody thing and become more comic booky.
it's I think it's the least, like, po-faced superhero thing, you know, that, I don't know, God, for a long time anyway, and I think it's really needed at this point. I wish it was a better show, but I would say it's worth it just for the note they're striking and the love they have for the source material.
It's definitely the least ashamed to be a comic book adaptation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually treats it as a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
But yeah, they're bringing in Jay Garrick, though. I mean, it's like, to me, okay, see, I'm a Flash fan. I read several of the comics when I was younger, but then discovered Spider-Man and never left the Marvel Universe. And recently I picked up when they launched the New 52, I picked up the Green Lantern and the Flash and Aquaman. And really enjoyed reading those comics, but not enough to, go back to being, you know, solid fan like I am. I mean, my car is covered with Spider-Man stickers and stuff, you know? I don't have a Green Lantern emblem, and I don't have a Flash lightning bolt yet, but this TV series is turning that way, especially, like I said, the deep cuts they're going with it. I'm just waiting for them to bring, I can't think of the original Green Lantern, the one that had the... basically his weakness was wood.
Alan Scott.
Alan Scott, yeah. I can't wait. I'm hoping that they bring him to this universe, because it's like, that's the, you know, that's really deep cuts. People really have a hard time understanding that. But then again, anything's a good rescue from that Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, boy.
Sad days.
The first, like, my first ever really superhero comic reading experience was that my big brother had been given this big red hardcover called The Great Comic Book Heroes by Jules Feiffer, and like the first maybe quarter of it is essays by him about these characters, and the rest of it is just mostly origins, but it's a story each by all of the great Golden Age characters. So Superman, Batman, you know, from Batman, it's like the first Joker story. It's the first Flash story, the first Green Lantern story, you know, Captain America, the Human Torch, all those guys. And so to me, somehow through dumb luck, my introduction to superhero comics was Golden Age superheroes, you know. And so the Flash, along with all those guys, has a huge place in my heart, just in as the in the pantheon. Right.
Right.
So, yeah, man, if they actually pull it off, they get a good actor for the part and they don't write a bunch of crap for him, then I'll be all over that.
Yeah. Basically, what they're doing is we've said that they're not afraid to show that they're a comic book based TV show. The Flash, Arrow's getting that way. But they're even so not afraid that they're bringing Golden Age comic book heroes into the picture, you know? And that's, that's real. I mean, really, when you think about it, those are some hokey characters.
Yeah.
I mean, and compared to today. But
well,
they're classic.
I'd call it swagger, honestly.
Yeah,
I mean,
there
I really
you go.
I think it takes guts to do that, you know? And they're really doubling down, you know? And I'm in. I mean, that's what I liked about the show, was being able to see something that's not watered down. Again, in the season finale, when the Flash comes flying out of a time wormhole and punches the bad guy in the face through a glass window, like breaks through the window and punches the guy in the face, he runs back up the lightning bolts to go back into the vortex. Like, that's the most comic book thing I've ever seen, like, or one of them, you know, in a movie.
Right.
So, yeah, I honestly trust him to try this anyway.
Yeah, so it should be a good season for that one.
Darn it, you guys. You're going to make me have to watch this damn show.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let us get a couple season or episodes into it, and then we'll let you know if you need to get caught up. Because maybe...
You guys are the worst, I tell you.
The worst.
The worst.
We're Iris West? Oh, no.
You're Iris West level. Okay, maybe not that bad.
No,
that's a special kind of awful.
Like, I hate her more than River Song. I mean, it's incredible how much I hate Iris.
Way worse than River Song. River Song at least looks great in riding pants.
And she's coming back for the Christmas special. You're just all over with joy. Christmas special is so well known for being quality material.
It's always great every single time.
Yeah, the annual garbage fire.
Well, I tell you what, I finally, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I asked you guys off the podcast about the Doctor Who specials. I was like, well, they had one coming up. What it is, it's like narrated by some nerd. Who was it, Isaac? You saw her. She was like a she was a YouTuber hosting that Doctor Who special.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh, you watched it.
Anyway, but basically what they're doing is just taking episodes and they're doing like, not quite a Mystery Science Theater, but they're having commentary during the breaks and stuff. So
because nothing will be quite a Mystery Science Theater. No. 3,000.
Yeah. So, anyway, all right, well, let's move on to another TV show here. Let's see, I'm trying to decide where I want to go with this. We'll start, we went with, let's go with Fear of the Walking Dead. We'll stick with the comic book realm. This series, are any of you guys watching this?
No. I am.
Okay, so one?
No.
Well, basically, it takes place, it's like how the outbreak happened for Walking Dead. And it's, from what I gather, it's the time Rick spent in a coma. This is what happened in the world while he was in that coma. And I'm telling you, at first I was real leery. I said, I'm going to watch it. It's Walking Dead. It's going to be kind of cool.
It's like Gotham for Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
That's actually a good comparison.
Yeah, but it's not as bad.
Not yet.
we're only three episodes into it, right? I mean, I'm surprised. The writing's really good. Basically, you're interested in these characters. And then the zombie outbreak starts to happen, and it's like, you actually want these characters to survive. So it's like, I didn't think I was going to be interested in them at all. I mean, there's a divorced dad, and he's a teacher, along with his new wife, who's a teacher. And, it sounded like, okay, yeah, that's like every single sitcom ever written. You know, but you're actually interested, and when these things start happening, it really is nice. And it's the typical Robert Kirkman writing going on, Greg Nicotero doing all his stuff right. The zombies are cool because in this one, there's one episode where this one fresh zombie was trying to attack this lady, and a kid comes running up with a knife and tries to stab him in the head, like you see in The Walking Dead, and it just goes right through the skull, and immediately the zombie falls. Well, they're fresh zombies, they're not deteriorated yet. And so it didn't work. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, they're fresh. You can't kill them that way yet. I don't know. It's a good in-between story.
To be honest, they're probably going to Game of Thrones them all at the end.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You don't think that they're going to have one or two characters from this show like show up in the next season of Walking Dead?
Maybe some, but yeah, Game of Thrones.
So you're saying this is like the farm team for the Major League show.
You know, and this all takes place in California, in Los Angeles, to be exact. And Rick and his crew are in Atlanta, so it would be kind of a stretch to get them together.
And after all this time, they've never really left that area, have they?
No. So,
why would you? It's a paradise.
And so, yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I think now they're in North Carolina when the season opens. I think they're in North Carolina, God's country.
Right. Yeah, because they were going to go ahead and head towards Washington anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to speak up here and get on my soapbox just briefly. I'm watching the show, and I'm going to continue watching the show for at least a few more episodes. But in my opinion, for there to be another Walking Dead series, it needs to deliver something that I've not seen before, that I'm not already getting from The Walking Dead.
Right.
Now, I can totally see where they might be going with this. It's like, oh, well, the show's so popular, you know, people want to see more of it. We'll give them another show of it. If that's their only reason for doing this, it's not going to last.
Right.
It's going to burn people out pretty quickly. So I'm waiting to see what the hook is. And it can't be, oh, well, this is the part that was missing from, you know, when Rick was in a coma. Because we've seen zombie outbreaks in how many movies now?
Yeah. I mean,
they're in the dozens now. So it's, you know, what I'm seeing right now is not anything I haven't seen before. It's got good production value. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that I care yet about for any of the characters.
Really?
Yeah, nothing yet. The central character seems to be the junkie son, who incidentally is another Brit cast as an American. I'm like, what is the deal with the casting director on these shows? They're just like going out of their way to cast Brits in American roles. Now, don't get me wrong, they're all great. I mean, I never knew until I saw them in interviews that they were Brits. They do great American accents. But hey, there's a lot of good quality American actors out of work, and I gotta stand up for my brothers there.
They're taking our gerbs.
Exactly. Well, but anyway, it's okay so far, but I haven't seen anything to make it stand out or make it extraordinary. I'm, you know, obviously they're putting all their chips on this junkie son to carry the audience, and I'm not with him yet.
Really? Well, you know what? I'm not even interested in him at all. I don't even see him as a. I hate him actually. I'll just say it right out. I just don't like him at all. But his mother, the way she's adjusting to, like, the last episode, the way she's adjusting to how, I'm loving that. I'm loving her. They show her thought process. You know, first of all, her boss becomes a zombie and tries to attack her. I don't know. It's just to me, I like her. I don't like. I hate that kid. I think he's a punk.
Yeah, I'm not really crazy about the daughter either.
She's just there.
Yeah, like she's kind of like Shannon on Lost. You know?
Oh Lord!
You know, I think you're right. You know, and the thing is, here's my thing. I don't really care if they continue this as a series. I like it as a little short in between thing they're doing right now. And if they do like Isaac said, the Game of Thrones thing, I wouldn't mind a bit. It would not. I mean, I am interested in these characters, but I don't care if they die because I've got The Walking Dead.
Right.
You know, there are characters that I've got my interest, but if they die, it'd be like, oh, cool. That's about all I can say.
And the father in this is just a little too goody two shoes for my taste. And he's just, you know, so earnest and, you know, trying to keep both of his families, you know, happy and going out of his way for every little thing. And, you know, going out of his way to care for this junkie son. And it's just, I'm just a little wary of it.
Well, it's like that. Actually, I think they used the line in the movie where they are walking through the school and the lady goes, "It's quiet." And the kid goes, "Too quiet." But it's like that dad. He's good. He's too good. So that might, you know, hopefully he dies next. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, the mom has definitely got my interest. The little, her student, that kid. He's got my interest too. That kid, I think's cool.
Yeah.
The little nerdy kid. Maybe because he's a nerd. That's it.
Yeah,
so.
That's it.
But I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, if they all die, I won't mind a bit, but I am interested in watching it just for the fun stuff. So, all right. Well, I guess it's like any reason we go to any other zombie movie. It's like, oh, we've seen it all before, but what the heck? All right. Well, let's move on to another one. Actually, three other ones I'm going to group in together because sci-fi has ever since last spring, they've started to redeem themselves as a science fiction channel again. They still haven't got rid of wrestling yet, hopefully. Anyway, but they've introduced some new series, and coming out, I'm not sure when the launch is. I wish I'd have looked it up before the podcast, but they're going to have Childhood's End. The Arthur C. Is it Arthur C. Clarke?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. His series, and actually, I guess it would be just that one book, what they're going to start the series on. They're going to base a series on that, and that's going to be interesting. I'm curious about how that's going to be put onto a TV format, but the trailers, if you will, the very short glimpses we see of it, it's not even a full trailer when they show it, but it looks very cool. So they have nothing that describes how the storyline's going to go in the trailers, but it looks visually stunning. But anyway, so they're redeeming themselves. So that's coming out. Two series that are going on right now, I think. Yeah, they're still going on. And one of them has just got my attention completely. It's called Dark Matter. Have you guys heard about this one or watched it?
No, I meant to DVR it, but I don't think I got around to it.
It's really interesting. It started out even better than I thought. Basically, this ship in outer space, the crew wakes up, there's alarms going off, fires going off, the hull's been breached in one area. And the crew wakes up out of these hibernation pods one at a time. And when they wake up, the one guy, he immediately runs to the bridge and tries to silence the alarm. A woman comes on, and she silences the alarm and actually stops the emergency process. And they all, they all make it to the bridge, but none of them know who each other are, and they don't even know who their selves are, okay? They have no memories. They just have, like, the rote memory of operating the equipment. They don't have any memory of who they are, what they're doing, and, you know, and why they're even together.
Was this written by Rod Serling?
It very well could be. I don't know. I wish I'd have looked up more information before I got trapped by it.
I was just thinking the same thing. That is such a Twilight Zone premise. I love it.
It is.
But that's not a bad thing.
No, and it's not. It's really the way they come together. There's like one guy who's like, he reminds me a lot of Jane from Firefly. A lot, but he's more renegade-y. I don't know if that's a good way to say it, but anyway, basically, they find some files. Oh, there's even an android on board the ship that helps control the ship that they awaken, and the android even has a lot of its memories erased. So it's, you know, they're all trying to rediscover, but they find out that they're a crew of pirates and mercenaries for hire, and they don't recall any of that. And it's funny because there's like the first two episodes, they go to this one planet, and originally they were hired to kill the people on the planet so that the corporations can move in and mine the planet. Well, they all of a sudden kind of got a heart and said, wait a minute, that's not right. And then as the season goes, they're kind of like, well, we're becoming new people. And I mean, I don't know, it's a weird premise. But as it goes along, they kind of discover a little more about themselves. One of them is apparently an heir to a throne on one planet, and he is being wanted for murder of his father, but he didn't do it. I don't know. When I heard about the show, I thought more along the lines of Lifeboat based on that. But then they actually know who they are on the Lifeboat. So, but I don't know. They're going through in the ship and they're trying to discover who they are as they go through space and try to work for the corporations and not work for them at the same time. But yeah, they trapped me. It was a very intriguing story as they try to discover who they are. And I'd say Sci-Fi did a good job with that. And the next series is called Killjoys. Now, Killjoys, I thought, well, that's just an odd title. And what had happened is I had my DVR set accidentally a half hour before the show started and before Dark Matter started. And that was half hour of Killjoys. And so I kind of just watched it just to see what it was like. And it turned out pretty good. It's a case of bounty hunters in space. So I haven't watched very many episodes of that one yet. But I've just watched that last half hour of one of the episodes. And it seems like a fun space adventure of bounty hunters.
Again, got that one DVR'd.
Yeah, okay. And I don't know when I'm going to be able to catch up on that, but Dark Matter has just got me... I'm watching every episode as it airs now. I don't know. Sci-fi is actually redeeming themselves, becoming science fiction once again. Especially, I can't wait to see Childhood's End, see how that goes.
That'll be interesting because it's such an iconic science fiction story. And I mean, it was so... I'm not going to get into spoiler territory for what it's all about and everything. But the idea of what the Overlords are about and what their history is with the planet and everything,
mm-hmm.
and what the plan is something that I think has been done a lot, certainly in comics and things like that. Like, I think it's a theme that's been explored many times by other you know, genre forms, and it'll be interesting to see how they can do it and make it seem fresh, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going to have to add a lot of, like, Jeopardy and stuff to it, because if I remember the book, there isn't a lot of, like, you know, gunfights and car chases in it, and they're going to have to come up with some of that to, you know, pad out the running time, so.
Yeah. Well, it's like when the movie iRobot came out several years ago, I was thinking, oh, cool, great Isaac Asimov story. Let's see how they do it. It didn't go, but they used the basic premise, you know, and it's like, well, okay, yeah, still good. I don't know. I'm hoping that they stick with the story and keep it real, so to speak, and talking in the vernacular of the youth today, keeping it real. Sure. As I stare down Isaac, he's like, what?
I heard vernacular, and I'm like, oh, hey, I use that word in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they do kind of stick to the original written matter, you know. We'll see, though. But, again, Sci-Fi Channel trying to redeem itself. So, all right, well, let's move on to another topic here real quick and convenient-like in TV. Isaac's been dying to hear someone else talk about this. Steven Universe, Tim Coker, you finally got to see it.
I did. I really want to, you know, issue my thanks to Isaac. Thanks a lot, Isaac, for encouraging and actually harassing me while all of us to watch the show, because I don't know if it's for everybody, but I love it. I just, and I'm only like six episodes in or something.
I'm not going to stop till all of you give it a try to at least episode 25.
It's a quality show. I love the premise. It's beautifully drawn. I'm being me. I can complain about anything. So if I'm going to complain about anything, it's that Steven is so often in, oh my God, I'm Steven and it's really amazing. But, you know, where he's always kind of shouting. Mm-hmm. And that's probably just because I'm like a middle-aged guy who has a kind of a quiet life, you know. I never had a kid, so I don't, you know. But that said,
I've had kids, and I still want to slap him.
Yeah. But
so he's hard.
He's a great character. The show has a lot of heart, and it's relentlessly compassionate, which I really appreciate. It is not a cynical show at all. It's extremely loving and positive show, and I kind of cherish that. I like that they're not trying to win the, you know, hip cynicism mm-hmm. award. They're actually making something, you know, that's kind of touching and profound at times, you know. And I don't know, I think it's a win. So I'm excited to see where it goes, and from what you guys tell me, I ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, it's pretty much right.
If you think it's touching now, you really, it, like, it's slowly, it's like barely on the surface of your skin, if we're talking about touching.
Wow.
Where you're at. Yeah, they break out the bags of feels later on that really, especially when they start talking about Steven's mom and the main mission of the gyms on Earth. And I'll tell you what, it took me 10 episodes before I finally said, you know, this is really good. And then after that, it's like I was stuck with it. But I'm glad you liked it after just a half a dozen, because you're going to like the rest of it even more so.
I liked it halfway through the pilot. I actually started with the, now I know, non-canonical pilot.
Yeah.
But to me, it doesn't seem like there's anything in there that's really contradicted later in the show. Or if it is, I don't know.
No, nothing is ever contradicted.
Thus far, yeah. I haven't seen anything contradictory.
So I'm glad I started with the pilot, because it just felt like a really good, useful primer, whatever, for the show. So that I didn't, when I watched the show, and you get to the first episode, you immediately know who's who and what's what. And
yeah.
You can just kind of get into it. But yeah, no, I think it, you know, it appears to be an Adventure Time or Bravest Warriors level win. And that's really high praise. Yeah, so I can't wait to see how they develop it.
Well, I have a feeling that, I mean, I can't wait. The new season starts,
starts next Thursday.
Next Thursday, yeah. So, you know, I can't wait for this next season. And again, it's just a little 11-minute show.
It needs one of those 30-minute time slots.
I don't know. I like the short one. That way, my attention span's better. But yeah, hey. I mean, one of the things that you're going to be amazed, I'm just going to drop the word. I'm not going to explain it. But merging. When you hit that point, you're going to like, yeah, that's a cool idea.
And you're only like three episodes away.
Yeah, the merging is cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that you liked it. I just wish the rest of the world could like this. But like you said, though, it's not for everybody. I'd agree with that. Like I said, it took me 10 episodes before I was like, okay, this is cool. At first I was, what?
But before we leave this topic, I've got to ask you guys, because I haven't asked Dad this yet either, but who is your favorite character on the show thus far?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm probably going to say Amethyst. Because she's kind of the sexy one. But no, she's just really funny. I love how she's designed. And I kind of love that she's sort of a Zaftig kind of full figure gal.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, but, you know, it's never like an object of fun thing or whatever. It's just who she is. I don't know. I just really like her. She's pretty unique as a character, I think. So
you're going to find out later in story. She has more backstory than anybody.
Yeah.
Oh,
her origin story is full of feels too.
Oh.
That's, yeah. All right, since Isaac asked the question, I have to say Garnet.
I love Garnet.
She's awesome. And okay, another spoiler here. They're awesome. So,
that's a little bit too much of a spoiler.
He'll realize it when he hears it or watches it.
I choose not to dwell on it.
But no, it's like I have to say, and plus I love her voice. That's a pretty sexy voice if you ask me.
Yeah, black people with English accents is like amazing.
Yes.
I don't know why, but I always think, oh man, hey, look, there's like Heimdall, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, wow. He's so cool.
Yeah.
Like Mel B.
From Spice Girls.
Spice Girls.
I know who she is.
She exists.
Okay, if you take away the Spice Girl stigma and her hosting of America's Got Talent, maybe But
literally.
But I don't know. She's got that Spice Girl stigma. But anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, I I think Tim Matson said it, that he couldn't stand the drawing of Steven's nose. You know what, Tim? After you said that, watching a couple episodes, I'm like, oh, I see what you mean.
It is a bit weird.
I should drop toast in it.
Oh my god, and if you did, it would be completely amazing.
Oh my god.
You could plug your charger into it.
I'd like to pop Steven and Iris West into some sort of capsule. and just launch them forever out of the universe.
No, you did. He is nowhere near Iris's lead.
Oh my god.
Listen, you may find Steven irritating, but Iris West is a terrible person. Capital T, capital P, terrible person.
Yeah, no, that is true. But listening to Steven is like taking a cheese grater to my brain.
Hey, don't knock cheese graters.
He's such a nice kid, though.
All right, well, that wraps up our television portion. Let's jump into a couple other subjects before we have our main topic for the night. We got to talk about this Lost Soul documentary thing that you guys watched, because I need a nap. You guys need to talk about that soon. But first, Tim Matson has got some introductions, because he is going to bring in the world of comic books and then jump into some video games. So Tim Matson, let's hear it.
Yeah, guys, I found a couple cool things here. I don't know if I know Tim's still reading comics, right? Tim, you're a comic guy.
Yeah. All right. I mean, you know, here and there.
Do you know about Plutona? Have you heard about that?
Or I think I've seen it, but I don't know anything about it. I was intrigued by it, but that's about as far as it went.
Okay. Well, it's a little bit like Stand By Me, in that you're following a group of high school kids or middle school kids. I'm not really sure which. And they're really well written. They're very believable as young kids. They squabble, and none of them are perfect. And they end up finding a dead body. But the catch is, this is a world where there are superheroes, and the dead body is a superhero.
Huh.
I think it's worth reading. I'd really recommend you checking it out.
And I definitely will.
The other one is Toil and Trouble, which is a comic about the three witches from Macbeth.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's good.
It is. It's very interesting, because it's all about them interfering with the battle before Macbeth. So you meet Banquo and Macbeth, and these three witches are interfering with Scottish history. They're setting up who's going to be king next, and one of them is not exactly on board with the other two, and it's interesting to follow.
I am intrigued by that. I would at first be skeptical, but you know, about the idea of like an expanded chapter from Shakespeare or whatever. But then I remember that like one of the best artistic experiences of my life was being in a play that was derived from Shakespeare, was Fortinbras by Lee Blessing.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
Eric, were you in that?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. It must have been right at the end when you left. But yeah.
Yeah.
So I now have to, you know, eat my initial cynicism and say, wow, that actually sounds really good.
And the other thing I thought I'd bring to the group is a video game that is much better than I think it has any right to be. Yeah, Supermassive Games developed a horror game that was originally supposed to come out on the PlayStation 3 as a motion title, one that used the PlayStation Eye. And they've kind of ditched a lot of the motion controls. You can still play it with some motion controls, but I chose to play it with traditional video game controls, and it was much better. It's Until Dawn. It's basically a throwback to 80s teen horror movies. You know, it's very cliched in its setup. You have 8 identifiable teenage stereotypes alone on a mountain in a cabin. Well, in a resort, an abandoned resort. And you're in control of their misadventures. You take control of different characters and different sections of the story, and it's entirely up to the player who lives and who dies. And every character can die, as I proved in my playthrough, and every character can live. So the story is somewhat mutable, so you can change the outcome somewhat.
So it's not like The Walking Dead, in which you choose when they die, not if they die.
Yeah, it's not entirely like that. Yeah, it's with The Walking Dead, it's a lot more linear. This is still, even though it's a very branching path kind of story, it still tells basically the same story from playthrough to playthrough, but the characters you have available to you throughout the entire thing is can be different. It's quite fun to kill everyone.
Now, is this like, what are the controls? Is this like a first-person type game, or?
No, it's third-person. Okay. It's a third-person control, and basically, as with all horror movies, they all end up split up. So it jumps from character to character, and you take control of a different character in different sections of the story. Like, two relatively frisky people go off to, you know, do what teenagers do, and so you follow
them. You mean
go
to church camp and sing gospel songs?
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly what they do. But it's something I would recommend. It's got plenty of jump scares, as you would expect.
Really?
But I think it has a pretty decent atmosphere and tells a somewhat cliched but fun story.
Now, is this only available on the PS4?
It is. Okay. Yeah, it's a PlayStation 4 exclusive.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, it looks like it got 5 stars rating on the PlayStation Store. I was actually looking into getting it, but it's full price $59.99. I'm like, I've spent too much money on games, so I got to pass for now. But
I think it's definitely something to pick up on sale.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's pretty near close out the podcast. You guys went through the effort. Of course, I don't have Netflix, so I didn't get to do this, but you guys watched a documentary, and I think Tim Coker is the one that introduced us to it, and even though I didn't get a chance to watch it. Hey, I will eventually, because especially after I hear what you guys have to say, it'll be my judgment, but for right now, I haven't seen it. So, Tim Coker, since you're the one that conned everybody into doing this, I'm going to let you take over this segment.
All right. Well, the movie is called Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. And so, you know, if you put your mind in the early 90s Wayback Machine, you might remember the much hated version of the Island of Dr. Moreau starring Marlon Brando and some other people. And it was just a movie that was hated. You know, John Frankenheimer directed it, but it was a really troubled shoot, and Val Kilmer was crazy and whatever. And I just remember all the bad news, so I never saw the movie. Thank heaven somebody decided to look into this story, because the story of how the film went wrong and what it was supposed to be, I think, is fascinating. It started as a movie by a guy named Richard Stanley, and it was a dream project of his. I never knew who Richard Stanley was, because I haven't seen his other movies. But Eric, you have, right?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I've been a Richard Stanley fan for quite a long time.
Yeah, so... You know, it makes me want to see his movies, but his vision for this movie I thought was really exciting, and I would love to see that movie. I mean, if I don't know how anything could live up to those, you know, incredible concept images that he's showing while he talks about what he wanted to do, but it's an incredibly bold thing to do, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's too crazy to work, and yet somehow it was going to happen, and then it just, you know, the gods destroy it. And there are a few documentaries in this genre of, you know, watching the cinematic car crash happen, but I think this one really deserves, you know, a favorable comparison with the others, like Hearts of Darkness, Burden of Dreams. Yeah, so I really loved the movie, and my main takeaway from it was that you never know what kind of beautiful inspiration and desire goes into making a movie that ends up being god awful, you know? And so when you see some just cinematic insult to God, nature, and human decency, you know, you never know what kind of beautiful germ was there that started it and made it happen. So that was my take on it. What did you guys think?
I thought it was a fascinating film. I don't know that he was ever going to be able to make this film, regardless. He comes off as someone who just was not experienced enough to make a film at this level yet. And once you add in the crazy antics of Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer, I mean, there was no effing way that this film was getting made.
No.
And it's a miracle that it got finished anyway. And I'm with you, Tim. I remember only all the bad press. And so I never did see The Island of Dr. Moreau. But I have since rectified that in this viewing. I watched the documentary and then turned around and watched the actual film. And I think it's fascinating knowing what we know from the documentary. I don't think the film is as awful as what I thought it might be. David Thewlis goes a long way to carry a lot of this film on his back. And Brando, while he definitely shows a lot of contempt for everything around him, is still a fascinating person to see on film. Val Kilmer is the thing that destroys this film, though. He is clearly beyond contempt. He is outright trying to destroy the film, and he is succeeding. Yeah.
He is the only real force of malevolence in Lost Soul. You know what I mean?
There's a lot that's a great way to put it, Eric. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad luck that happens to a lot of people in this film, but I don't think anyone had any bad intentions you could say that possibly Brando was undermining the film. But I think by the time Brando even showed up there, that things were way, way out of hand. But Val Kilmer was the only person who was just purposely trying to poke holes in the film and trying to see it fail, simply because he agreed to do it and then decided he didn't want to do it.
Right. Well, okay. Now, Eric, have you watched it again since you saw the documentary? Oh, you didn't, right?
No, I didn't get to watch it. It's I definitely want to, though. I will soon.
Well, did you rewatch it,
okay,
Tim?
I did. I had never seen it either, so I watched it for the first time after seeing this documentary. And Tim, did you have the experience of feeling like burning, seething hatred of Val Kilmer every time he was on screen?
Absolutely. I just wanted to punch him right in his smug face.
Oh, my God.
The only saving grace was looking at him and going, in 20 years, you're going to be fat and nobody will care about you.
Try 10 years. Honestly, Tim, I was so glad to hear that you were also not as horrified by the movie as you expected to be, because it's not a great movie, but it's not incompetent.
No.
You know, like, it's not, no. Okay, but here's what I'll say about Brando. Say what you will about him sabotaging the production and whatever, but him elevating that little guy to be in every scene was genius.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing when he made that call.
And the piano scene is... I'm not going to say that it's great, but it's awesome.
It's indelible.
Yeah, it's indelible. It is special. I mean, that is truly special. Whether it's good or not, I can't tell you, but it's special. And if a movie can put something in that's special, I think that argues in its favor.
Okay, I got to jump in there and explain something to the people who are listening to this who haven't seen this documentary. Mini-Me was, I mean, not only inspired by this, but this is like three quarters of Mini-Me was taken from this film. In fact, the scene in, I don't remember which Austin Powers movie, it was either 2 or 3, where Dr. Evil's playing the piano and Mini-Me sitting at a little mini grand piano on top of that, it was taken directly from this movie. It's brilliant. I didn't even realize that when I watched Austin Powers, because it'd been so long since I saw this film. But when I saw the footage that they showed in Lost Soul, I was like, oh my God, it is Mini-Me.
I think what's really fascinating about this documentary is there's not a moment where they mention David Thewlis. I don't think his name is even mentioned in this thing.
Oh my God, right? I didn't know he was good. I kept thinking, when's Rob Morrow going to show up?
Well, see, now I knew David Thewlis was in this movie, and I knew he was like the main character of the film, but I was so surprised that they never mentioned him in the documentary. And I'd really like to know why they didn't talk about him.
But they could at least refer to him, and nobody even mentions him.
No.
It's very strange.
That's the most bizarre bit about this documentary, and this documentary includes witchcraft. So that was so bizarre.
Like, for real.
Why would they not mention David Thewlis? Did they dislike him intensely, or was he the only one that was doing his job competently, and so he doesn't bear mentioning in this movie, in this documentary? Because I think that's actually relatively true. I think he's the only one that delivers a credible and well-done performance.
I hadn't looked at it that way, but you're absolutely right. He saves the movie. Like, whatever there is to be saved in it, he brings a lot of integrity to it, and really, he's committed.
Okay. He's absolutely committed to it. Yes.
Now, I do remember there was at least one point in the documentary where they said that they had to cut it to make Thewlis's character more prominent than he originally was. But that was the only mention I remember hearing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I watched the whole thing. I'm like, and then afterwards, I was like, wait a minute. They didn't say anything about David Thewlis. And so I was fascinated.
Now, I want to say that I, you know, as a fan of Richard Stanley, and anyone who's interested or watches this documentary, if anyone has any interest whatsoever in a really unique and enjoyable filmmaker, go see Hardware. It's pretty much in every video store. It's not hard to find. The story itself is just basically Killer Robot Gone Awry. It's partly a ripoff of Terminator, partly of Alien, and I mean, I think that Richard Stanley's even on record as saying, as you know, those were definitely inspirations. But he adds a level of style to this very, very low budget production, and it just looks really fantastic. And I highly recommend it. And then he did some other films, Dust Devil, which is also really bizarre, not as strong as Hardware, but definitely worth seeing. He did some really experimental type documentaries. One was about witchcraft in Haiti, which when you see this documentary will have a certain resonance, because he does talk about going to a witch friend of his to to get the job in the first place, and then to sabotage things when things started going badly. It all kind of ties in, and I would highly recommend checking out his stuff. But I feel bad for Richard Stanley, because I like you, Tim Coker, was really fascinated by his storyboards and his concept for this. I would pay so much money to see the film that he wanted to make. Now, whether it was actually possible to make that movie or not, that, you know, as Tim Matson said, that could be argued. But here's the thing. Look at Jodorowsky, there was a documentary
that Dune.
Jodorowsky's Dune, which I don't think could ever, ever, ever be made in a million years, but it's really interesting to see his take on it. But then he made other films that were much smaller than that, that if I'd seen those, a script for those films, or seen a treatment for those films, I would have been like, right, that's never going to get made. You can't film that. Well, he did. So it is possible. But it is, you know, when I hear Richard Stanley's concept, I was like, you know, no one is ever going to come close to that kind of a visceral telling of this story, which is a really deep, deep story. And it works on a lot of different levels.
I want to make sure I'm clear. I don't think his vision of Dr. Moreau was unfilmable. I think he, at this point in time in his life, was not capable of dealing with this type of production. I think it's clear just from the documentary that this production turned him from someone who is eccentric to someone who is, I think, damaged after this experience.
Yeah,
I think
it's broken.
I think this really damaged him as a person.
Oh,
mentally.
Absolutely.
But I just really feel that, given the studio he was working with, given the actors he was working with, and his approach to it, there was no way he was going to succeed.
But he was set up to fail. I believe that.
I think it's partially true, but I think it's also clear that he didn't really engage with the people around him either. So I think that both sides of this failed when it comes to making this film. I don't think Richard Stanley is blameless, and I don't think he's entirely a victim. I think, if anything, he's a victim of his own inaction and poor decision making.
That's definitely the case, but he was certainly ambushed by a challenge that was far beyond what he'd signed up for. Yes. You know,
absolutely.
And I want to say, if the film had gotten made according to the plans he and the producer initially made, I don't know, maybe he could have pulled it off, or at least made a very interesting movie, even if it isn't like the great one that's in all of our heads from having watched this. And maybe that's the thing, is we all get the best possible version of the movie in our heads, you know, seeing it without awkward line readings and whatever. But Yeah, it's a fascinating might have been, and you know, this is, I'm going to talk to the listeners out there in Nerd Upland that, you know, the thing that brings all of us together is our love of these kinds of stories and cinematic takes on these kinds of stories. And what you get when you watch this film, besides, by the way, an Indiana Jones level disaster, rolling disaster happening, you know, to somebody who is definitely not Indiana Jones, you know, so he gets crushed by the rolling boulder, right? But it's that kind of a story. It's that crazy. But there is this kind of beautiful idea of what this movie might have been that I think for people like us is impossible not to see, you know, and that as much as anything is the reason to check this movie out.
So once again, the name of the movie, the documentary is Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. And listening to you guys talk about this, I think I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to watch The Island of Dr. Moreau first, then I'm going to watch the documentary. And I'll see how that affects me. then like, first I'll just say, oh, yuck, and then I'll go through and have the seething hate for Val Kilmer later. So, but yeah, like I said, I wanted to get in on this, but not having Netflix made it hard. I looked on demand. I looked at any other resource I had available to me to find this movie, and it's just not that easy to come by. Unless you have Netflix. So I'm going to have to either one of these days break down and fully get Netflix, or just keep complaining about the reasons that why I don't. So,
well, Netflix has a great selection of movies that no one wants to see, or very few people want to see, which is why a movie like this is not there.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's how Isaac saw the movie Rubber was Netflix.
Yeah, I love Rubber.
Me too.
So, yeah, that's the reason he got to see it. So, is at a friend's house. So we may have to do that here. Because what is it? Basically, you just go through anything that's rated 1.5 stars, put that on your list to watch. All right. Well, and another thing I've gathered from listening to this review of this movie is that I think that Bruce Willis is the new Marlon Brando. The reason being, I've heard a lot of talk from a lot of different directors, starting with Kevin Smith, all the way through even here recently, Woody Allen kicked Bruce Willis out of his film. Because Bruce Willis likes to just basically rewrite the scripts. Ugh. And, I mean, when I first heard from Kevin Smith, I'm like, ah, yeah, he just probably didn't like you. But when I heard recently that Woody Allen kicked him off the film, or whatever the latest film he's doing, I was like, oh, maybe it's not, because Woody Allen's pretty darn serious. But yeah, so I think Bruce Willis is the new Marlon Brando.
Not
in the classic acting method, though.
Right.
I don't think anybody's ever said that sentence with a straight face.
I mean, in the aspect of trashing a film. There.
Yeah.
An astronomically overcompensated actor who has a god-awful amount of power over what happens on the movies he chooses to be in, right?
That's exactly
what you're saying. Yeah, true.
Yep.
You know, the one thing I will say about watching the movie after the documentary, knowing what Brando is doing, knowing that he hasn't memorized any of this, he doesn't know any of these lines, he has an earpiece that someone is feeding him the lines.
Oh, man.
And there's a monologue that he delivers at some point, and you can just see the pauses where he's like, getting the line, and now I'm saying the line.
Right,
and now
right.
I'm waiting to hear the next line. Okay, I've got that line, now I'm going to say that. It's fascinating now that you know what is happening, to watch that monologue play out. It's amazing.
All right, folks, well, that makes another episode of the Nerd Up podcast come to its fruition. Bad movie making and the reasons why,
the worst.
So well, let's close out the podcast with lots of great stuff for you to purchase. You have to support the podcast because we're such a beautiful thing. We don't try to mess up any film. We just love to talk about it. So, you know, you can always shop on Amazon through our website, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. Buy those t-shirts. I mean, really, those t-shirts are awesome. Coffee mugs, satchels, backpacks, messenger bags, anything else you can think of. You can even get posters, I believe, too. So anyway, help support the podcast. It's greatly appreciated. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. You can follow along. You can know when the next one's posted. Also, when you go to iTunes to download your latest podcast, make sure you rate and review us. And if you want to write a review, we'll be glad to read it on the podcast if you wish. If you don't wish, we'll do it anyway, probably. But anyway, so that's it for the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on social media, on Twitter anyway, at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
I'm Tim Coker. You can reach me at Tim K. Has to Say.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
I'm Tim Madsen at Tim Gone Mad.
I'm Isaac Wilson. You can reach me at EvilBacon88 on Twitter.
That's just weird. That was creepy.
Anyway. Morgan Freeman does what Morgan Freeman wants.
All right, so we'll end the podcast right there, and then we're going to be back next time. Who knows what we have to talk about? Maybe a whole bunch of fun stuff. Maybe. So in the meantime, like we always say,
stay nerdy.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've looked at other website designers. There's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
Call 855-719-3093, 855-719-3093, 855-719-3093. That's 855-719-3093.